Welcome to NTD News Today.
Here are today's top stories.
G7 leaders calling out China for supporting Russia and harming the global economy with its unfair trade practices. What's in the upcoming G7 communique and how President Biden's working to counter the communist regime?
Another busy week on Capitol Hill, from the vote on holding Attorney General Merrick Garland in contempt to a Senate push to vote on IVF. Our Washington correspondent Luis Martinez has this week's legislative wrap-up.
Hunter Biden makes a surprising legal move in his lawsuit against Rudy Giuliani over laptop data.
World leaders will join Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky at a peace summit this weekend, but two world powers will be absent.
The U.S. Treasury Secretary says she sees signs that the nation's economic outlook will remain encouraging.
The world's most prestigious cooking competition was held in New Orleans this week. Team USA faced stiff competition, but was focused on winning. Find out how they did.
And in sports news, both the NBA's Dallas Mavericks and hockey's Edmonton Oilers faced daunting 3-0 deficits in their respective finals. NTD's Dave Martin joins us to discuss.
This is NTD News Today, live from our NTD Global Headquarters. Here are Stephania Cox and Chris Beers.
Hi there, I'm Kevin Hogan, sitting in for Chris Beers today.
And to begin with some breaking news coming in about the Second Amendment and the power of the federal government.
The Supreme Court is striking down a federal ban on bump stocks on guns.
Bump stocks allow a shooter to convert a semi-automatic rifle into a weapon that can fire at a rate of hundreds of rounds a minute.
The Trump administration imposed the ban after the 2017 Las Vegas shooting. In a 6-3 opinion, the justices ruled that the ban on machine guns doesn't apply to bump stocks.
They wrote, quote, "A bump stock does not convert a semi-automatic rifle into a machine gun any more than a shooter with a lightning-fast trigger finger does. Even with a bump stock, a semi-automatic rifle will fire only one shot for every function of the trigger," they said.
The three liberal justices dissented. They wrote that striking down the ban hamstrings the government's efforts to keep machine guns from gunmen like the Las Vegas shooter.
Meanwhile, with just over 4 months until the general election, President Biden's ramping up his campaign. First Lady Jill Biden is reaching out to seniors, a demographic that makes up a large share of the population in some swing states.
Jill Biden is pushing back against concerns about her husband's age. It comes as President Biden is gaining with voters his own age. The First Lady is traveling across several swing states to kick off her husband's outreach to senior voters. Her travels include rallies.
You know, a lot of presidents talk about infrastructure, but Joe made sure that communities like this one are getting the money you need to build, rebuild your bridges, your roads, your railways, your airports, and so many other infrastructure projects.
And also bingo nights and pickleball games. Biden is working to become the first Democrat in nearly a quarter century to win those 65 and over. A Democratic community organizer in Michigan describes what she hopes will be a revival with senior voters.
They're at a point in their life where they've seen how politics has changed and recognize that it's a priority for them.
Grand Rapids and surrounding Kent County is a bellwether within Battleground Michigan. Biden won here and statewide in 2020 after Trump narrowly carried both 4 years earlier. Older voters are weighing in on the November race.
I never thought I'd be one of those people holding up a political sign or being involved, but I can't sit back.
I feel betrayed. Right now, I'm not going to vote for president. The Palestine thing is, it's a red line, and he's not there.
Senior voters are a much sought-after section of the electorate because they are reliable and turn out to vote.
Former President Trump turns 78 today. With President Biden being 81, the two major party candidates running for president this year are the oldest ever to seek the office.
In a Reuters Ipsos poll in February, 78% of respondents, including 71% of Democrats, said Biden is already too old to work in government. 53% said Trump was too old.
Trump is scheduled to speak today at a birthday party in West Palm Beach, Florida, organized by a group of supporters.
Trump and Biden are neck and neck in national opinion polls, with Trump ahead in several battleground states that could decide November's contest.
The first televised debate on June 27th will allow voters to see if their chosen candidate is up to the task of leading the country.
An independent candidate, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., says he has submitted enough signatures to appear on the general election ballot in Alaska and Tennessee. The deadline to qualify for CNN's presidential debate rapidly approaches. The Kennedy-Shanahan ticket is now on the ballot in 8 states. The campaign claims to have gathered enough signatures for 13 more states, totaling 292 Electoral College votes. This is crucial as they aim to qualify for CNN's June 27th presidential debate, with the eligibility window closing on June 20th. To join that debate, candidates must be on enough state ballots to reach the 270 electoral vote threshold based on the debate qualification rules listed by CNN. Kennedy recently filed a complaint with the Federal Election Commission accusing CNN of colluding with Biden and Trump's campaigns to exclude him from that debate.
Hunter Biden agrees to drop a lawsuit against Rudy Giuliani and Giuliani's former lawyer. The first son had accused the pair of violating his privacy over data allegedly taken from his laptop.
Attorneys for all three parties filed an agreement yesterday to drop the lawsuit.
Now the judge must review the agreement before it's finalized.
Hunter Biden was convicted by a jury on Tuesday of lying about his illegal drug use to buy a gun, making him the first child of a sitting president to be convicted of a crime.
Giuliani filed for bankruptcy late last year after he was ordered to pay nearly $150 million to 2 former Georgia election workers.
And in Italy, G7 leaders are hammering China over its support for Russia and harmful trade practices. A final communique to be adopted today will also warn the communist regime over its aggression in the Indo-Pacific. NTD's Iris Tao has more on day 2 of the G7 summit in Italy.
It's day 2 of the G7 summit here in Italy, and leaders are turning their focus to China. A senior administration official told us that today President Biden and G7 leaders are looking into more actions to counter China's non-market practices and efforts to dominate strategic sectors which undermine U.S. workers and industries. That's been a focus of the Biden administration, which just a month ago announced massive tariffs hikes on Chinese steel, EVs, and semiconductors.
It's not competition, it's cheating. And we've seen damage here in America.
And here at G7, President Biden is seeking to build a united front against China's actions. In a final copy of the G7 communique obtained by NTD, G7 leaders will together express concerns over China's actions leading to global spillovers and harmful overcapacity. They will also hammer China on its militarization in the South China Sea, malicious cyber activity around the world, and the human rights situation in Tibet, Xinjiang, and Hong Kong. More importantly, G7 leaders will call out China's ongoing support for Russia's defense industrial base. President Biden naming China in supporting Russia on Thursday.
China is not supplying weapons, but the ability to produce those weapons and the technology available to do it. So it is, in fact, helping Russia.
And President Biden is scheduled to fly back to the U.S. later tonight, wrapping up his 3-day trip to Italy. And a final G7 communique will also be adopted later today. Reporting from Bari, Italy, Iris Tao, NTD News.
G7 leaders sing happy birthday to German Chancellor Olaf Scholz. President Biden called on everyone to treat the chancellor to a birthday serenade before resuming meetings today.
Tradition of the Biden family, got to sing happy birthday on the birthday.
Yeah.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Olaf. Happy birthday to you.
Some of the leaders you can see there singing include Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni, French President Emmanuel Macron, British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak, and Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau.
Scholz seemed to be delighted by the singing, beaming throughout the celebration.
Today's the final day of talks at the annual summit, with China topping the agenda. Pope Francis will also put in a historic appearance to discuss artificial intelligence.
Many of the leaders will leave Italy late tonight, including Biden. Meloni said they have already agreed on the summit's conclusions to be approved at the end of the day.
And up ahead, the House Appropriations Committee passes an annual spending bill to fund Congress. However, members of the legislative branch won't be getting a raise.
California lawmakers consider a proposal that would charge journalism usage fees for some tech companies. Social media giant Meta isn't happy about it.
And a federal investigation is currently underway on an incident that left substantial damage on a Boeing 737 MAX. More in just a moment here on NTD News Today. Senate Democrats are accusing U.S. Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas again. They say he took three additional trips funded by a billionaire benefactor. Redacted documents show private jet trips between 2017 and 2021 that he didn't put in his financial disclosure form. Thomas has come under fire for failing to disclose gifts from Texas billionaire Harlan Crow.
The chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee said Crow disclosed the travel details in response to a vote last November. It authorized him and another influential conservative figure to be subpoenaed.
A spokesperson said Crow agreed to provide information to the committee dating back 7 years. As a condition of this, he said the committee agreed to end its probe into Crow.
A Supreme Court spokesperson did not immediately respond to a request for comment. House Oversight Committee Chair James Comer has announced an investigation into the company NewsGuard. The firm operates a news rating system designed to combat misinformation by scoring news sites on reliability and trustworthiness.
Comer says he's concerned about the potential impact of NewsGuard on First Amendment rights and its role in potential censorship.
He's requested documents from NewsGuard's CEOs, Stephen Brill and Gordon Krovitz, focusing on their contracts with federal agencies and policies to avoid bias.
NewsGuard, known for its nutrition label style ratings, assesses news sources based on criteria like accuracy and transparency.
Comer wants to determine if any government involvement has influenced these ratings. NewsGuard has responded to the probe, saying the company provides fair ratings to both conservative and liberal outlets. The House Appropriations Committee has passed an annual spending bill to fund Congress. However, members of the legislative branch will not be receiving a cost of living adjustment. Congress members got a 2.8% pay bump back in 2009. Since then, they've made $174,000 a year. Congressional leaders receive higher salaries. The Hill reports that the Speaker of the House earns about $223,000 a year. The Senate majority and minority leaders rake in about $193,000. Some lawmakers say these salaries aren't enough to ensure that anyone can serve, regardless of income bracket. Others say that Congress need to focus on the needs of the American people. They argue that addressing inflation should be a bigger priority than asking for a raise.
California is more than doubling the number of National Guard troops across the state and at border ports of entry. One of the main goals is to stop fentanyl and other drugs from ending up on California's streets. Governor Gavin Newsom says the number of service members will go from around 150 to almost 400. It's unclear how many of the new troops will be stationed at the ports of entry. Newsom said in a statement that our top priority is the safety of our communities statewide. He added that state, local, and federal partners are working together to take down transnational organizations. Last year, California already increased the number of troops at the border by 50%. The governor's office says that increase helped support a record seizure of over 60,000 pounds of fentanyl in 2023. California lawmakers are considering a proposal that would charge journalism usage fees to some tech companies. Social media giant Meta says it will block news on its platforms if the bill is signed into law. The Journalism Preservation Act would require the largest tech companies to pay digital news providers for the content posted on their platforms. The legislation would apply to tech firms with at least 50 million monthly active users in the U.S., and at least $1 billion worldwide, or with revenues exceeding $550 billion. Currently, only Meta and Google fit the criteria. The tech company says it differs from Google because the content on Meta platforms is posted by users. On the other hand, Google's results are generated by search engines.
Disney is asking a federal appeals court to dismiss its lawsuit against Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. That's after the governor's appointees on the Central Florida Tourism Oversight District reached a deal with the company on development of Walt Disney World over the next 15 years. As part of the deal, Disney has agreed to invest $17 billion in Disney World over the next two decades. The Central Florida Tourism Oversight District has committed to improving the infrastructure on the resort's property. Disney controlled the municipal services in the district before DeSantis' oversight appointees took over. The deal allows Disney to build a fifth major theme park and two more smaller ones if it chooses. It also received approval to increase the number of hotel rooms on its property.
Heavy rainfall has caused unrelenting flooding in South Florida since Tuesday and is expected to continue for a fourth straight day on Friday. The rain has turned roads into canals and forced some residents to stand on the roofs of their cars or trudge through waist-deep waters.
Robust tropical moisture fueling the soaking storms is expected to slowly start to move out of the area over the weekend.
Flood watches remain in effect for more than 7 million people across South Florida through Friday evening. Another 2 to 4 inches or more of rainfall is expected through Friday night.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis declared a state of emergency for several counties, and officials have urged people to stay at home instead of walking or driving through the floodwaters.
And a Southwest Airlines passenger jet sustained substantial damage after a rare phenomenon called a Dutch roll at nearly 38,000 feet. A federal investigation is currently underway. A Boeing 737 MAX with 175 passengers and 6 crew on board was traveling from Phoenix to Oakland on May 25th.
Its tail started to wag left and right while the aircraft's wings tipped from side to side. Despite this, the plane managed to land safely in Oakland and no injuries were reported.
The Federal Aviation Administration announced yesterday that it's working with Boeing and the National Transportation Safety Board to investigate the cause. Meanwhile, the FAA is also investigating potentially falsified documents. They were used to verify the authenticity of titanium used in some recently manufactured Boeing and Airbus jets.
Titanium is crucial in aerospace for making landing gear and turbine components. The investigation comes after a parts supplier found small holes in the material from corrosion.
Boeing reported a voluntary disclosure about potentially falsified records from a materials distributor. Both Boeing and Airbus have not commented on the matter.
NASA announced on Friday that the Boeing Starliner spacecraft is now scheduled to undock from the International Space Station and return to Earth on June 22nd. On June 5th, NASA astronauts Butch Wilmore and Suni Williams were launched aboard Starliner. They arrived at the ISS the next day. During their 24-hour flight, the spacecraft encountered 4 helium leaks and 5 failures of its 28 maneuvering thrusters. They are aiming for a departure no earlier than June 22nd. This leaves open an opportunity for further extensions of time at the ISS. Depending on local weather conditions, the return to Earth is expected to last about 6 hours. They will target a location in the desert of Utah, New Mexico, or other backup locations.
And still to come, Russian President Putin stated his terms for a truce on Friday. The U.S. Defense Secretary said on the same day that Putin isn't in any position to make demands on Ukraine to end the war.
World leaders will join Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky at a peace summit this weekend. However, two world powers will be absent.
And welcome back. Another busy week on Capitol Hill. Lawmakers moved forward with appropriations bills, voted on holding Attorney General Merrick Garland in contempt, and Senate Democrats pushed a vote on IVF. Our Washington correspondent Luis Martinez joins us live from the Capitol with this week's legislative wrap-up.
Luis, let's start with the House of Representatives. What are the most salient items Congressman tackled this week?
Of course, Kevin, Steph, the first item in this legislative wrap-up is the National Defense Authorization Act for fiscal year 2025. The House of Representatives pass this bill this Friday. That means that House of Representatives has just approved the authorization to dispense of $833 billion for defense spending for next year. Now, House Republicans managed to do this by keeping the bill under the limits established by the Fiscal Responsibility Act of 2024. That means that defense spending for next year, according to this bill, won't increase by more than 1%. Republicans managed to do that by cutting funding to DEI, climate change, and also abortion spending by the Defense Department. Of course, House Democrats, all except six House Democrats, voted against this NDAA bill for fiscal year 2025. I spoke with Congressman Robert Garcia, a Democrat from California, and this is what he had to say about the vote.
First of all, I opposed it last year. I'm going to oppose it again. I think there's a lot of horrible Republican amendments in it, and I think it's really unfortunate that they're trying to legislate, you know, women's right to choose, rights for gay people in, you know, a really important authorization. So I think it's really unfortunate.
It's also important to note that this week, House Appropriations Committee also passed their budget for State Department operations for fiscal year 2025 and also the agriculture bill for the budget for next year. Now, House Appropriations Committee managed to decrease State Department operations by 11% and managed to decrease agriculture spending for next year by 1.4%. I caught up with Congressman Andy Harris, who sits in the House Appropriations Committee and is the chairman of the subcommittee in agriculture. And this is what he had to say about the agriculture bill that they passed this week.
You're satisfied with the budget cuts? Did you get everything that you wanted done on the bill?
We made some modest reductions, just like every American family is doing.
Do you think Democrats in the Senate might be on board with the proposed House bill?
I don't think they're going to be on board with the fact that we actually trimmed the budget a little bit. They want to spend more.
The House of Representatives also passed this week a resolution that holds Attorney General Merrick Garland in contempt of Congress. Now, this resolution passed according to party lines, and the chairman of the Democratic Caucus, Congressman Pete Aguilar, accused House Republicans of using this vote as an electoral vote, actually accused Republicans of doing President Donald Trump's bidding. Now, let's remember that this resolution to hold Attorney General Merrick Garland in contempt of Congress is because the Justice Department has refused to divulge the audio recordings of the interview in between Special Counsel Robert Hur and President Joe Biden as part of the DOJ's investigation into the president's handling of classified material. Let's hear what Democratic Caucus Chairman Pete Aguilar had to say about this resolution.
Republicans are choosing extremism and contempts and impeachments after their impeachment, you know, efforts failed and hit some roadblocks. Now they're moving to this. This is all just an effort to satisfy the former president who has asked them to do something, to do anything, to distract from his own legal issues.
Some House Republicans believe that the resolution to hold Attorney General Merrick Garland in contempt was not enough, like Freedom Caucus member Congresswoman Ana Paulina Luna, the Republican from Florida, who announced this week that she had filed a motion to hold Attorney General Merrick Garland in inherent contempt of Congress, which is a prerogative that Congress has that would technically allow Congress to detain Attorney General in case the DOJ doesn't take action within 10 days. Let's listen to Congresswoman Ana Paulina Luna.
Yeah, I actually already filed an inherent contempt resolution. And so 10 days after we vote this off the floor for criminal contempt, in the event that the Department of Justice does not do their job, we will do it for them. Great. It's already been filed. It's a privilege motion, so great, it'll happen.
The House of Representatives also held a hearing in the House Foreign Affairs Committee to examine great power competition here in the Western Hemisphere. House Democrats used the hearing to push for an increased budget for State Department operations. I caught up with Democratic ranking member Congressman Gregory Meeks, and he agreed with Republicans in what he sees as the major national security risks to the U.S. in the Western Hemisphere, China, Russia, and Iran, but disagree with the policy prescriptions. Let's listen to what Congressman Gregory Meeks had to say.
To say that is the great power competition, meaning that we're only going to look to do to stop or to block China. So the interest is not our friends and our allies in the continent. It's only about China. So, yes, we want to compete with China, but the reason what we want to do is to make sure that we're doing the right thing in our hemisphere and for the countries in our hemisphere.
It's important to mention that House Republicans managed to reduce State Department operations through the House Appropriations Committee by 11%, but they also reduced the budget request from the president by $19 billion. So a very big difference in between what the White House is asking and what House Republicans are willing to give. But those are the most salient items in the House of Representatives this week, Kevin, Steph.
Yeah, a lot going on there in the House this week. Luis, what can you tell us about the Senate side?
Yes, on the Senate side, we have Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, who put to the in the Senate floor a bill for a vote. The bill is the Right to IVF, the Right to In Vitro Fertilization Act. The bill failed to reach the 60 vote threshold needed in the Senate to pass, and it was mostly seen by Republicans as a messaging bill. Let's listen to what Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer said after the vote.
Nearly every Republican just blocked a bill that would have protected people's access to IVF. Protecting IVF should have been the easiest yes vote the Senate has taken all year.
This is the third week in a row that Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer has put a bill on the Senate floor that has failed and put a bill that has been considered by Republicans as a electoral messaging bill. 3 weeks ago, it was a bipartisan border bill that had already passed the Senate floor back in February. Well, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer put it once again in the Senate floor, and it failed at that time. Then last week, we saw Chuck Schumer put the Right to Contraception Act on the Senate floor, also failed. And this week, the Right to IVF. Senator Ted Cruz from Texas very straightforwardly accused Democrats of using Senate votes in order to get electoral points for the general election in November. Let's listen to Senator Ted Cruz.
They want to use this as an issue in November to scare people, and they don't want to talk about their own radical record. Instead, they want to falsely claim somebody is coming to take contraception. That is deliberately false.
So now the Senate and the House of Representatives are out on a recess for at least 1 week. And those are the main items that happen in both chambers this week. Kevin, Steph.
Luis, thank you for your update there on the upper chamber. And back to what you're saying about the House, contempt is a rare congressional power. And it seems to be a little bit messy to use sometimes. And Attorney General Merrick Garland is now the third AG to ever be held in contempt. Very good update from you on Capitol Hill. Luis Martinez, thank you. Vessels from the U.S. and Canadian navies are in Cuba today. Their presence follows a fleet of Russian warships that arrived in the Caribbean nation earlier this week for military exercises.
An American fast attack submarine docked at the Guantanamo Naval Base in Cuba earlier today. Hours later, a Canadian Navy patrol ship sailed into Havana.
Both the U.S. and Canada described their naval presence as a routine port visit. They said it was unrelated to the presence of Russian warships.
The Biden administration previously said it was monitoring the situation with the Russian warships, but said they posed no threat to the region.
Russia has also characterized the arrival of its warships in Cuba as routine. They are expected to remain in Havana Harbor until June 17th. World leaders will join Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky at a peace summit this weekend. Attendees will explore options for ending the deadliest conflict in Europe since World War II, but Russia isn't invited. NTD's Andrew Thomas has the latest on the event.
Volodymyr Zelensky's peace summit begins tomorrow at the Swiss mountaintop resort of Bergenstock. The meeting is an effort by Kyiv to rally support for Ukraine's war-ending strategy.
It's an attempt of Kyiv to convene as high level the representatives of the heads of states to actually reaffirm support for Ukraine, but also to kind of gather momentum for framing this war and also to count friends.
The US, France, Germany, Italy, the UK, Canada, and Japan are among those set to attend. India is expected to send a delegation. Turkey and Hungary will send their foreign ministers, but Russia will be absent.
Russia is not willing to negotiate at this point. It feels it has an upper hand on the battlefield.
Despite months of intense Ukrainian lobbying, some others will not be there. Most notably, China, a key consumer of Russian oil and supplier of goods that help Moscow maintain its manufacturing base. Russia wasn't invited to the summit and has described the idea as futile. Andrew Thomas, NTD News.
And next, Beijing-based diplomats say China is skipping a weekend summit on a peace plan for Ukraine. The Chinese regime has instead been lobbying governments for its alternative plan. 90 states and organizations have registered to take part in the summit in Switzerland. It will seek to build support for Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky's peace proposals, including the full withdrawal of Russian troops from Ukraine.
Moscow was not invited to the meeting. China has close ties with Russia and says it will not attend the conference because it does not meet Beijing's requirements.
After China said it was not going to the summit, Zelensky accused Beijing of helping Moscow undermine the meeting. The United States has encouraged China to attend the talks to help with the peace process. And we're shifting gears now to some headlines from France, Germany, and other European countries. Russian President Vladimir Putin says the world has reached a point of no return regarding global security. According to him, the Euro-Atlantic security system is collapsing. Putin is accusing the U.S. of undermining global security because of its exit from arms pacts.
Putin today also commented on Western plans for more Ukraine aid. Several countries have agreed to use profits from Russian assets frozen abroad and give them to Ukraine. Putin says it amounts to theft, warning that it will not go unpunished.
On the other hand, Russian President Vladimir Putin offered Friday to immediately order a ceasefire in Ukraine and begin negotiations if his terms are met.
Those are for Kyiv to start withdrawing troops from the four regions annexed by Moscow in 2022 and renounce plans to join NATO.
Such a deal appears a non-starter for Kyiv. The nation wants to join the military alliance and has demanded that Russia withdraw its troops from all of its territory.
There was no immediate comment from Ukraine on Putin's proposal.
Meanwhile, U.S. Defense Secretary Austin said on Friday that Russia's Putin is in no position to make demands on the Ukraine to end the war.
Putin has illegally occupied sovereign Ukrainian territory. He is not in any position to dictate to Ukraine what they must do to bring about peace. I think, that's exactly the kind of behavior that we don't want to see. We don't want to see a leader of one country wake up one day and decide that he wants to erase borders and annex the territory of his neighbor. That's not the world that any of us want to live in. And so I think he is not in my view, not in a position to dictate to Ukraine what it must do to pursue peace. Putin can end this war today.
Almost a fifth of Ukrainian territory is controlled by Russia as the war heads towards its third year.
Ukraine says peace can only come from the full withdrawal of Russian forces and the restoration of its territorial integrity.
French parties start campaigning today for the surprise snap election called by President Emmanuel Macron. He called the election after his party lost heavily to Marine Le Pen's right-wing party in the European ballot.
Le Pen kicked off her campaign tour today. She went to a meet and greet in the country's north where she has most support. Her party is reportedly negotiating with potential allies. That's to form a team that could run the government should it win a snap election.
And France's leftmost parties are forming a coalition to challenge Marine Le Pen. This includes the Socialist, Green, Communist and Unbowed France parties.
The left's chances of winning the elections are slim, according to polls, but their coalition could get enough votes to hinder both Macron's and Le Pen's parties from reaching a governing majority.
Germany is trying to avoid an escalating trade conflict with China. That's after the European Union threatened to impose heavy tariffs on Chinese electric vehicles.
The goal of the tariffs is to protect European automakers from competition, saying China unfairly subsidizes their market and undercuts global prices.
Germany's voice carries strong weight within the EU since it's Europe's largest economy.
Germany's car manufacturers are opposing the EU tariffs. They fear retaliatory measures from China could harm their business in the Chinese market.
Speaking to Wall Street and business executives at the Economic Club of New York on Thursday, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen brought up how Chinese trade practices could interfere with economic cooperation.
China's overcapacity risks our supply chains being artificially overconcentrated, posing additional security and economic concerns. China also pursues a variety of unfair trade practices, from restrictive investment policies to economic coercion that further undermine fair competition. If China continues on this path, I fear that its policies may interfere significantly with our efforts to build a healthy economic relationship.
She stressed that the Biden administration is not looking to decouple from China, but just seeks fairer trade practices and a more level playing field.
The U.S. has unveiled tariff hikes on $18 billion worth of Chinese imports that will take effect this year. Washington's top diplomat in Taiwan has a message for the West. She said Friday that China's provocative actions around Taiwan, Japan, and in the South China Sea run the risk of an accident, one that could unintentionally spark a broader conflict.
The United States is profoundly devoted to a status quo in the Straits and in the region, the broader region, that is one of peace and stability. And that is why we have consistently urged the PRC to avoid coercive or provocative actions, both in the Taiwan Straits and in other areas like the South China Sea and off Japan, because provocative actions are almost by definition dangerous. They run the risk of a miscalculation or an accident that could spark a broader conflict, as you said.
Sandra Udkirk serves as director of the American Institute in Taiwan. It serves as Washington's de facto embassy on the island. Despite the lack of formal ties with Taiwan, the United States is Taiwan's most important international supporter and arms supplier.
In the past 4 years, China has stepped up military and political pressure against Taiwan.
Just last month, Beijing held war games around the island following the inauguration of President Lai Ching-te, who won an election in January. China calls it a separatist because he supports Taiwanese democracy. And coming up in sports news, both the NBA's Dallas Mavericks and hockey's Edmonton Oilers face daunting 3-0 deficits in their respective finals. NTD's Dave Martin joins us to discuss.
And the world's most prestigious cooking competition was held in New Orleans this week. Team USA faced stiff competition but was focused on winning. Find out how they did. Welcome back. And now for your sports news, we're joined by NTD's Dave Martin. Dave, a lot going on today, but let's start in golf, as today is the second round in the U.S. Open. Now, Tiger Woods is always the big draw, even though he's struggled of late. How's he faring here?
Yeah, he struggled in round one anyway. He shot a 4-over-74 yesterday. That put him 9 shots off the leader and low 100s out of 156 players, but that's just round one. Now, he needed to be in the top 60 after today, though, to make the weekend cut, so he's definitely got his work cut out for him. He doesn't tee off today until about 1:15, though, so that's something we'll be following this afternoon, obviously. Now, meanwhile, world number two, Rory McIlroy, he was tied for first yesterday. He's, though, shot a 1-over through 16 holes today. Now, this is a guy who's won a couple majors in his career, but he's yet to win this one. And sentimental favorite Phil Mickelson shot a 9-over-79 yesterday. And fortunately, that put him on the very low end of the leaderboard. He's won all three of the majors, three of the four majors, except for the U.S. Open, though he's finished runner-up 6 times. That's a record. Now, we won't know for sure what that cut line is, though, until later this afternoon. But we'll have to watch out, see where Woods ends up.
I know you'll be watching. I want to turn now to the NHL. Florida beat Edmonton last night. And what do you think about the Oilers' chances going forward from here?
Well, I mean, not very good. I mean, down 3-0, there actually is a little bit of precedence in NHL history. 4 NHL teams have rallied from an 0-3 deficit to win the series, but that's out of 210 attempts. So
It's obviously tough to win four in a row with your backs against the wall. I mean, to do it, they're clearly going to have to get their power play going. They were 0-3 yesterday. They're now 0-10 in these three games against Florida. Now, for the playoffs, they were like 19 out of 51. That's just under 40%. That's pretty good. But if you don't have that going, it's tough to do it. And Florida's got a very good penalty kill unit. They've got a very good goalie. So this has been very difficult. Should the Panthers, though, get that one more win, that'll be their first Stanley Cup title in franchise history. Now, that game will be Saturday night in Edmonton.
Such an exciting game. And it was about 19 minutes in that first period when Forsling made that pass. Reinhart redirected it to break the ice, putting them up 1-0. It's just incredible matchup they got.
You know, how you position your stick so quickly to get the right angle to get that past the goalie all in a split second, I'm always amazed at that. I mean, those passes are coming very fast. So, yeah, that's impressive.
Lightning reflexes. Okay, Dave, we have a similar situation tonight. The NBA playoffs, Boston plays Dallas. They got a 3-0 lead themselves. What do the Mavericks need to do to get back in the series?
Well, you know, unlike the NHL, no NBA team has ever come back from an 0-3 deficit. That's 156 previous teams have tried. Only once even did a team rally to tie it at 3. That was Boston last year, actually, but they lost Game 7. Now, if Dallas is going to do this, they need to get Kyrie Irving going. He did have a great game last night, though. Now, unfortunately for them, Luka Doncic fouled out with like 4 minutes left in a very close game. Doncic is one of the best players in the league. But Boston has been kind of able to exploit him on defense. Sometimes their offense, they'll just start off by, you know, whoever Doncic is guarding screens the player with the ball, and then he has to switch on them because Boston has so many good three-point shooters. You just can't leave them open. So it's really, they're really making him work on both ends of the court. It seems to be working. Now, I get the feeling the Mavericks are actually going to win tonight just to send the series back to Boston. That game tonight is going to be at 8:30.
I have to hold you to it.
All right. You hold me to it, all right? I'll talk to you Monday, all right?
NTD's Dave Martin, thanks so much for the sports update.
Thanks, guys.
The German port city of Hamburg celebrates the start of Euro 2024 with an eye-catching installation made of shipping containers. Each container symbolizes a national team competing in the tournament.
There are 24 containers painted with national flags of each team, and they're placed into 6 towers. Each pair of containers represents a group stage match.
The Euro 2024 project manager team said organizers looked for an image which would connect Hamburg, known as Europe's third largest harbor, and soccer.
Hamburg prepares to host the 5 matches, including 1 quarterfinal, in the Euro 2024. The first game that will be played in the city is Poland versus the Netherlands on Sunday.
During the month-long soccer tournament, Hamburg is one of 10 German host cities. The tournament kicks off in the Bavarian capital of Munich today. 40 miles of orange bunting and orange tarps. This is the Dutch summer of soccer in a normally drab suburban street in The Hague.
This is one of several streets in the Netherlands that get an all-encompassing orange facelift during European Championships and World Cups.
Houses are plastered with orange tarps and banners, street lights and trees are wrapped in orange, and garbage containers are orange. Litter bins are red, white, and blue, the colors of the Dutch flag.
The decorations appeared for the first time in the street during the Euro 1988 that took place in West Germany. That was when the Netherlands won its only major soccer tournament.
While starting out as a joke, the street had quickly become what is arguably the orangest place on the planet, though some other equally lavishly decorated Dutch streets also seek to lay claim to that honor.
And next, 2 chefs representing the U.S. competed at a prestigious international food competition in New Orleans this week. They used flavors from their native California in hopes of securing a victory. Take a look.
The Bocuse d'Or is an international cooking competition held every other year. This regional competition for the Americas was held this week in New Orleans. A committee of chefs picks the ingredients each team must prepare. This year's competition featured ingredients associated with New Orleans cuisine.
It's a very tough decision because, I mean, it's like, do you go the gumbo route? You know, somebody in Peru know how to make gumbo, you know. So we chose alligator sausage, grits, wild boar rack, and seafood from the Gulf of Mexico.
Team USA consists of Chef Stephanie DePalma and her assistant Bradley Waddle, both from California. The team formed recently for this competition.
We met for the first time 7 weeks before we competed. So it was a very quick turnaround,
We get along very well. We have a lot in common, and I think we make a great team.
While they face stiff competition, Chef De Palma has her eye on the prize.
But for me personally, I have one goal in mind, and that's to reach the top of the podium.
De Palma describes what she calls a California celebration of Louisiana shellfish. Chef De Palma describes the dish they prepared for the competition.
So we really wanted to highlight each individual component, but then make it a very cohesive dish, and also really draw inspiration from where we're from in California and be very seasonal in what we selected with, or you know, what we served with. So we incorporated, you know, beautiful tomatoes, corn, squash, squash blossoms.
They also cooked a refined corn dog with alligator sausage, encrusted with a batter of buttermilk, grits, and cornmeal. The chefs are happy and proud to represent their country.
Representing your country as a chef is a very rare thing, and to be able to do this and represent our country alongside all of these other really amazing chefs that are doing the same. We all have the same amount of time. We all have the same ingredients. To do that it's really special.
A panel of 24 renowned chef judges awarded Team USA the win. Now they'll move on to the finals in France in January.
Let's go, Team USA!
The ZSL London Zoo has announced the names of its three new Asiatic lion cubs. To celebrate Father's Day, the zoo revealed the names of the 13-week-old baby big cats.
The cute cubs were born on March 13th. The males are named Molly and Siani. Shanti is the female.
All three are the cubs of 7-year-old mother Arya and 14-year-old dad Banu. The names were chosen with the help of school children from the UK.
The students were asked to come up with some ideas to suit the cubs.
Times radio listeners picked the final three.
Very sweet. Well, for round-the-clock original news coverage, you can visit us at ntd.com or download our NTD app.
And be sure to stick around for NTD Newsroom at 3 p.m. Eastern. We'll cover more stories from the U.S. and around the world.